I don't want to come off and think, well, I could have gone faster and I'm never going to do it again now. If I wanted to do it, I wanted to do it properly.
I watched videos of Mercs being stretchered off. I thought it was all a bit of showmanship and I couldn't walk properly for 4 days.
There's no tactics, no hiding place. It's the ultimate test. You step up and you succeed or fail.
This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast. Sir Bradley's Hour Record, supported by Jaguar, with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney and Daniel Freeb.
Hello, this is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast. In association with Jaguar, my name's Lionel Burney, I'm with Daniel Freed.
Hello, Lionel.
We're in the Lee Valley Velodrome, the Pringle as it's popularly known. It's emptying out after Bradley Wiggins' hour record attempt. Won't give the game away because earlier on we did a live podcast which you can catch in its entirety on Mixlr.com, that's Mixlr.com/thecyclingpodcast if you want to listen to our entire broadcast. But what follows now is an edited kind of highlight of our live Hour Record podcast, which was anchored by Richard Moore, who's gone off to the press room to do his many other assignments that he has to do. Daniel and I get away slightly lightly. We're relaxing with a beer. And so this is the Bradley Wiggins Hour Record attempt.
You can only sort of admire Bradley Wiggins' position on the bike, to watch him in time trial mode like that. We've seen it so many times. Rock solid. I mean, back perfectly straight. You know, the teardrop helmet resting on his shoulder blades. And he is a sort of consummate stylist, isn't he, when it comes to a time trial.
And this is a discipline which allows a rider, well, certainly a rider is as disciplined as Wiggins to stay in that position throughout the duration of the hour. As we've seen time trials all the time, one of the things that aerodynamics experts are constantly trying to drum home to road riders is they need to keep their head in the same position, and they almost never do.
Well, we were chatting to the Jaguar engineer the other day, and he was talking about the problems of the wind tunnel, and they don't even use a real wind tunnel, they use a digital wind tunnel, Jaguar, for the bike that he's riding. And we should say thank you to Jaguar. That wasn't actually deliberate. But thank you to Jaguar, who are supporting and sponsoring this podcast. They've supported both our preview and our live show here, so thank you very much to them. But he was saying that the problem is, it's all very well a rider holding a solid, steady position in a wind tunnel, or even worse, as a digital image in a digital wind tunnel. But in reality, it's hard to, you know, when it comes to making the actual effort, especially over the course of an hour, it's a different proposition.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel and I had a chat with Rob Hales shortly before Wiggins came up onto the track. Rob Hales, of course, Olympic medalist, world champion on the track. One of those riders who really made riding on the track his métier, his job of work. And he learned the skill of how to ride, how to use the banking to your advantage. And one of the things Rob was explaining to us was that it's not a constant effort. Riding around the track, you get a slingshot effect coming out of the banking, and you have to be careful not to get carried away with that on the straights. And so the one thing that Bradley Wiggins has riding around on the line, as he is doing very consistently, is he has got a career of track craft behind him.
Wiggins gave an interview to Rafa just this past week. I think it's available online to listen to. It's a fantastic listen. It's about 20 minutes of Wiggins talking about, I suppose, the art of time trialing and his love of cycling. And he comes up with a very memorable and evocative image of comparing being on the track like this with the rhythm of straight banking, straight banking, straight banking, to a little bit like being a train. And he compared it specifically to being in the Eurotunnel. He was in a Eurostar cabin once, and he said there's a button that the drivers have to press every couple of minutes to make sure you're still awake, because it's so hypnotic, you're in a trance. And see it here, how he blocks everything out, how all these people are here to cheer him on, and yet he's doing his best to ignore them. It's a bit of a paradox, that. He's just concentrating on that rhythm of straight banking, straight banking, straight banking, and the different efforts that are required in each place. As you say, you speed up on the banking, and so you have to press on a little bit there so that you're not producing a surge in power on the straight.
And the very best thing about that interview, Rich, the confession from Bradley Wiggins that the other day he reached into his collection of retro cycling gear, plucked out a Mappe jersey, Mappe the Italian super team from the 1990s, and went training in a Mappe jersey.
Well, it was a big cheer there as he went through 10.5 kilometres. Is that a significant mark, Lionel? The old has he broken the world 10 and a half kilometre record?
That's a hugely significant mark. The Berzin hour, that's only 4 kilometres away. He's very, very much on course for that. We will make an announcement when he does break that.
Let's focus on the Berzin mark. Before we get there, will we hear from his coach? I've got Ciro Scognamilo standing beside me. And Ciro, sorry, I'll have to keep you there for a few minutes. We've got an interview to hear from, but you stay there. Don't go anywhere, okay? We're going to come back to you. But before that, we've got Heiko Salzwedel, who is the German who works at British Cycling, has known Bradley Wiggins since he was 21. I met him at the Velodrome the other day, and he's been coaching Wiggins to for his hour record. Here's Heiko now.
I mean, as older you get, as more can you cope with high intensities. This is a clear fact. So you get used to that, yeah? And Brad also, over the years, he has developed such a high self-discipline. Whatever he wants, he gets, and he takes the extra mile. So life has shaped him, and that's why he can cope with high intensities better now in more advanced age than
is
he was
also coming off the road. The sort of training he's done for the Grand Tours, has that also made him a more durable athlete?
Yes, certainly. Also, the road is a very important part, also even for a track endurance athlete. Yeah, and like with Team Wiggins, we're going to a couple of very ambitious races just to get this conditioning done. Because I have one philosophy, one experience. You cannot replicate that workload, what you're doing in a race with all these emotions going on. You cannot replicate this constantly in training. That's why road racing is an important part of a track cyclist preparation.
He seems, Bradley, very relaxed, very happy to be back in a track. And he said, he made a comment that if he could have been an hour record rider his whole career, you know, it's kind of the perfect event for him. Has that been your experience? Have you seen a kind of happy and relaxed Brad leading up to this?
Absolutely. Also for him, it's a new chapter of his life. Now a big ship has been gone from his shoulders. He told me, Heiko, I want to start from scratch onwards. Also I just be another rider like everybody else, because I was asking him initially, jokingly, if I have to say Sir Bradley Wiggins to him. But he denied and said, no, I want to be selected for the team only on my merits. If I'm good enough, if I'm not good enough, I respect your decision.
I mean, you've coached a lot of younger riders, and you were instrumental in the careers of the likes of Mark Cavendish, Geraint Thomas, when they were much younger. What is it like coaching such a senior athlete and as you say, a sir, and somebody who's at the other end of his career? I mean, can you take the same approach, or do you have to modify the way that you work with him?
You definitely have a much more powerful relationship with an older rider or with a more experienced rider, because it's not like I'm dictating anything. It's a sharing. It's a sharing and bouncing ideas, and it works really well with Bradley. Also, I think the last couple of weeks, also since Paris-Roubaix, since we worked together, we have been coming closer and closer together, and it's a wonderful relationship, and it's wonderful working with Bradley.
Sorry, we had to cut Heiko there. We'll maybe go back and finish the interview with Heiko, which was recorded a few days ago, because we've been joined at our little table here by Shane Sutton, the mentor to Bradley Wiggins for many years. Shane, what's been your role in the build-up to the our record?
Say that again?
What's been your role in the build-up to our record?
Oh, yeah, no, just coordinating and making sure I put the right people around Brad. And because you've got a great coach there in Heiko now, and Tim been helping out as well, but you know, just making sure that, you know, we've got all our guys, you know, from BC, from here, and making sure that he gets everything he needs, really.
Is he somebody who needs that sort of continuity of working with people he's been working with a long time?
Yeah, I think, you know, he trusts in the people he knows, and you know, he's been fantastic in the build-up, couldn't ask for any more. He's a little bit pretty early, but he's obviously feeling good.
Well, he did start early. What was the reason for that?
No, I think he just wanted to crack on, and you know, and you can tell he's very toey, because he's been like around 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, so I think he's got plenty in there. It's just a matter of keeping him under control at the moment, which Heiko's doing.
What about the rumours that he's done a full test over an hour? Has he done one?
There's no, I don't know who's been saying that, but you know, he's not done an hour. The longest he's gone, you know, is 30 minutes in total, and that showed us to see around about 54 and a half pace. So, with plenty in there, So, you know, he's not done an hour.
What's his mood been like? I mean, a few weeks ago, before Pirate Bay, he was quite tense, I think it's fair to say. He seemed a lot more relaxed here. What's been your observation?
Well, he's probably more at home on the boards and the cobbles, that's why. You know, this is his domain. You know, he's probably one of the greatest track endurance riders of all time, and you put him on that black line, he just dials in, he's nice and relaxed. And most of all, you're going into his domain, you know, 1 hour of time trial. You know, he's going to feel relaxed.
A lot of people on Twitter and so on are asking us about his line, that he's not sticking strictly to the black line. He is drifting up a bit. Is that inevitable, or are you happy with the way he's riding it?
Yeah, no, he's navigating and how he wants to navigate. He wants to probably get a little bit deeper in the bends and drift a bit in the straights. But, yeah, I mean, you know, this guy, he executes better than anybody. So, you know, for me, you know, everything's going spot on at the moment, but we're early stages.
Shane, you're a pressure expert. How's the pressure at the moment, mate?
Yeah, the pressure's around 1,030. That's tough conditions. And we just hope that, you know, it doesn't take too much out of him getting into the back end of it.
Shane, how does this compare, preparing for the hour record, to other things that Brad has prepared for in his career? Is it very similar to the World Time Trial Championships last year, where he was not really coming off the back of a big, heavy roadblock of work?
Yeah, he's done much the same. He's used a lot of the world's prep from last year into this, but obviously he's put the little bits of track work in between. So pretty much, you know, Tim, Heiko and that, you know, they've sort of kept, you know, basically his road prep in there, and he's just been touching the boards, and, you know, at this moment in time, that's worked.
And he shaved his beard off as well, and he told us in the week he wasn't going to. He said there's no aerodynamic benefit.
Well, you say that, but his helmet's very smooth.
Shane, obviously your main job these days is your performance director of British Cycling. Brad's going to step off the track here and commit to the British team for the Rio Olympics. Does that excite you? Is that something that you think he can do? He can finish his career with a gold medal in Rio?
Yeah, I think, you know, you just got to look up around you. Anything to do with Brad Wiggins tends to excite people when it comes to bike racing. And, you know, if Brad's coming back to ride, you know, in the team pursuit and be part of that unit, we're all excited, you know, and probably no one's more excited than the group of guys he's got around him, you know, with the Tennants, the Clancys, and these guys, you know, the Burkeys and the Owen Duels. Everyone's excited, as we are, at, you know, at the helm of British Cycling.
So finally, Shane, what distance is he going to do here?
At the moment, you know, I've always said, given the conditions, I've said a mid 54 to long 54, and I'm not wavering from that. I still believe we're in that ballpark, but only the last 20 minutes will tell, because he'll try and raise the bar then. And, you know, Brad's very good at going very deep, but he could find something and, you know, and surpass that 55. But my belief in what we're seeing to now, and what we're seeing in training, he's a mid 54 to long 54.
Thank you very much, Shane. Enjoy the evening. Cheers. That was Shane Sutton.
Rich, we've missed a historic moment in the velodrome. We've missed Bradley Wiggins breaking the Berzin hour. He's now 18 kilometres, 500 metres, so he's gone past that historic mark of 14.85.
He'll be crying in
Vyborg in Russia.
He'll be eating sour cold dishes of smoked salmon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, perhaps I should give a bit of an update. Bradley Wiggins has ridden 75 laps, that's 18.75 kilometres, 21 minutes on the clock just coming up, and he's on course for 54.566 kilometres. So Shane Sutton's prediction there that he'll do mid 54 to long 54, that's looking pretty spot on at the moment, Rich.
Just looking at some of the questions that were receiving here. So a question about Giro. Is Giro wearing a Donington Monsters of Rock t-shirt?
I must confess that now I'm wearing a t-shirt made by Tour de France. I don't know why.
It was a very odd choice.
It's an odd choice. I mean, it's a Tour de France won by Vincenzo Nibali last year, maybe for this.
Okay. Asserting a bit of Italian superiority here.
A cycling podcast t-shirt arrived for Chira at my house yesterday. Unfortunately, I wasn't there to take the delivery. But Chira and I are going to make a bit of a pilgrimage tomorrow to Wiggins' old stomping ground, Kilburn. I live very close to Kilburn.
and we're going to go to the post office, collection office, and we're going to pick up Ciro's I Must Confess t-shirt.
That's fantastic news, and we'll get pictures of Ciro and his I Must Confess t-shirt. Tweet them. Sales going well, Dan. You're in charge of t-shirts. We
oh yeah, tremendous.
Imagine we're in the middle of Wiggins, our record, we're talking about t-shirts. Ciro, you're scribbling furiously in your little notebook there.
Actually, I don't know why I'm writing this time so bad. These references to the old record of downloads. There is not a real reason for that.
No, it's all going to be rendered redundant at the end.
Just to give me a sense to my presence here in London. But, Richard, the most important thing for me is to be with you, together with you and together with our listeners.
I must say, it's nice, and we didn't think we were going to be in the same area as you tonight, Ciro, so it's a real bonus to have you in our midst. It was good to hear from Shane Sutton as well, wasn't it? A man who knows Bradley Wiggins better than anybody else.
Yeah, he knows Bradley Wiggins very well, but he also knows how to prepare for specific events, and I think one of the things in Bradley's career is he's been best when Shane Sutton has been close to him, because Shane has a way of kind of cutting through all of the external factors and focusing in on what has to be done, what has to be achieved in the training in order to set down a performance. And the hour record is the ultimate test of pacing and judgment, really. It isn't just getting up on the start line and seeing how you get on, seeing how far you can go in an hour. They've got a strategy. You know, when he was talking about 0.2, 0.3, that's 16.2 or 16.3 second laps. And it's that consistency that they're looking for over the course of an hour. And Shane is the master at that, really.
We can maybe hear the rest of the Heiko Salcedo interview. No, sorry, our producer's shaking his head. We can't, that's gone. Sorry about that, Heiko, but hopefully you got most of that interview. We've had a few questions on Twitter. What's the air pressure in the velodrome doing to Daniel's hair?
It's always difficult. High pressure, I think. I face a lot of the same issues with my hair as Wiggins does with setting our records. High pressure is definitely bad.
I can confirm that we're sitting right in the middle of the track, and the commissars are getting a little bit concerned that Daniel's hair is obscuring the view of the finish line from one end of the track. He may have to be escorted out.
It may also be a fire hazard as well.
Definitely. Put a blanket over him. Ties into the next question. Actually, we're getting asked some really hard questions here. Who's the sweatiest, either of you three or Wiggins?
Well, I've had a very stressful build-up to the hour record, trying to make sure we could get on air, so I've really been through the mill.
I'm not sweaty at all, really. I'm like the England cricket captain, Alistair Cook, who famously doesn't sweat.
Sorry, Daniel, we lost you there. What happened? Some frantic signalling going on.
I was just explaining that I don't really transpire.
Perspire. Transpire. Right, okay, I should let slip a podcast secret here that several times in the recording of each episode, Daniel goes, sorry, can I just do that bit again? Thankfully, that's not an option here, and transpire will go down. We're getting asked more hard questions. What in the seven hells is Brunel doing there? That's a good question. What is Johan Brunel doing here?
Well, Daniel had a bit of a chat with him earlier. Daniel, did you find out?
He's just kicking about. He lives in London, although he'll soon be moving back to Madrid, I understand, with his family. Invited by a couple of guests. I'm not exactly sure who they are or what they do, but yeah, he was local, so he thought he'd come down. First bike race or bike event he's been to for some time, 2 or 3 years, I think.
We also saw Pat McQuaid. I pity anyone wearing a pale blue shirt tonight. I think, do you remember that famous Tony Blair blue shirt moment? It's not a good look. I'm looking around, quite a few pale blue shirts in the audience here. I prepared for that eventuality. I wore a mainly white shirt, so no. Well, you can't see the damp patches. That's the advantage of a white shirt. But yeah, Pat McQuaid's here. His son Andrew McQuaid is the team manager of the Team Wiggins, also a rider's agent, looks after several riders. Richie Port is one of his boys. Peter Kenyuk is one of his boys, and today Peter Kenyuk won stage one and the Critérium du Dauphiné in France, clipped away towards the end. A very good win by him. Well, there was a bit of a cheer there, Lionel. What was going on?
Well, I think the commentators ramping up the atmosphere in here. and everyone is getting fully behind him. You know, coming up to the halfway mark now, 26, nearly 27 minutes on the clock. So this is the point where I think it's going to start ramping up for Wiggins, and this is where he probably needs to just make sure he doesn't go too far in the red too early.
Well, I mean, he still looks exactly the same to me. He's going around and there's...
I said earlier, chaps, you know, we picked the single cycling event to do a live podcast, which requires no punditry whatsoever, does it? It's like watching a goldfish go around, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we did set ourselves quite a challenge here, but I'm sure this won't be the last live podcast that we do. It's even a possibility at the Tour de France.
No one has attacked. No one's been dropped.
Not yet.
That is true, Daniel. No one has attacked, no one has dropped. And I think that's what makes the event quite... It is unique. It's just one man against the clock. You know, the time trials are called the race of truth. But this is the ultimate race of truth, really. There's nothing to beat Wiggins except himself. And that's probably how Wiggins likes it.
I was saying earlier, before I was interrupted, that Andrew McQuaid is here, manager of the team. We spoke to Andrew McQuaid the other day, Daniel, you and I. There was a little bit of talk about what the drug testing regulations, rules would be here since Bradley Wiggins left Team Sky in after the Pirate Bay in April. That meant that he obviously was no longer part of the biological passport, slipping down to a continental team, no longer part of the UCI biological passport. So we asked Andrew McQuaid about that. Apparently, if you're going for a record, I didn't know this, but if you're going for a record, you have to be part of the biological passport. So he is still on the biological passport program, and he will also be subject to drug testing here, which could be carried out by the UCI or UK anti-doping or indeed both.
Indeed, yeah. Well, I mentioned earlier that we'd spoken to Rob Hales, Daniel and I, before the Hour Record started. So let's hear from Rob Hales. Rob, of course, is a former world track champion, an Olympic medalist, a real track specialist, and he's ridden Madison events with Bradley Wiggins in the past. So let's hear from Rob now. So Rob, we've just seen Miguel Indurain come into the centre of the velodrome here. He seemed very impressed with your achievements.
Well, you know, all us big stars are in the track centre. I've just been introduced to him as a three-time Olympic champion, so I'll take that any day. It's starting to build up, isn't it, the atmosphere. And I think it shows the gravity of what we're about to see in the next few hours. The big stars, they're all here. They're here to witness something, I think, quite special. With the weather, maybe not as special as it could be.
Yeah, the pressure's too high. I've had to become a meteorologist in the last 24 hours, working out the effects of high pressure on athletic performance. Just explain to people a little bit what the impact is and why it's not ideal conditions today.
Well, I had a comment the other day saying, well, surely it's indoors, it doesn't matter. It does. Okay, if it rains, we're not going to get wet, unless this roof leaks as well, like many other velodromes. But no, the high pressure system that we've had come in basically means that the air is denser around us all, and so it's just harder to get through. So the fact that Brad, I don't think there's any denying that Brad's going to break Alex's record. Poor old Alex doesn't get much of a mention these days, because it's all about what Brad will do as opposed to breaking Alex's record. But I think there's no doubt that he will better the record. But I think with the pressure, it's just over 1,000 millibars of pressure, which isn't ideal. So whatever Brad does, I think he will probably be a couple of laps short of where he could have been had we got a different weather system here. So
it is as much as 400-500 metres it could make that much of a difference.
Yes, I think so. I don't know the exact details, but yeah, it's certainly in that area, I think. Yeah, so it's quite big. It's quite big. But seeing as Brad wants to actually add about 8 or 9 laps to the record, you know, it's still obviously not it's not bad, but it's not ideal for the eventual distance that Brad's going to do.
Now, you spent a lot of your career preparing for a very intense 4-minute effort in the team pursuit. Can you get your head around what it takes to focus to the same intensity for an hour?
No, not at all. The difference with the hour, obviously, you know, I've done time trials of that length. Most of us have, but you get these areas of recovery where it's slightly downhill. You can get out the saddle more often. You know, you're breaking for bends. Here on the track, there is none of that. It's 100% from the start to the finish. It's just relentless. And this is the thing that Brad, and I think any other rider who has gone for this record before, once they get into that 45, 50 minutes and beyond, they're in pretty much unknown territory. But of all the riders who have been through that and are about to, Brad is the number one rider, I think, to be able to cope with that. Only time will tell.
Over the years, we've seen riders who aren't necessarily track specialists have a go at this, and even in the recent months, I mean, Thomas Dekker's track craft wasn't exactly A1. Brad Wiggins is obviously, you know, a very experienced, very accomplished track rider. Explain to me what riding on the track for an hour is like, because it isn't a consistent effort, is it? You've got to take the bends into account, you've got to ease off a little bit and push the pressure on. So how does all that work?
If you're not used to riding the track, when you ride around the bottom, when you go down the straights, it actually feels like you're going uphill. And then when you go into the bankings, you accelerate and it feels like you're going downhill. Now, when you're an experienced track rider, you don't feel it because you just soak it up and you actually go with the track. But when you're not used to it, you tend to want to push on harder in the straights. But what that actually does, it goes against you. So once you start to get tired, the track comes back at you and it just gets very hard and it's draining. So Jens Voigt, when he went for the record back at the end of last year, he had to spend 3 weeks on the track. He'd hardly done any track riding and he had to get used to that. One of the riders who would certainly be capable, I think, of breaking the record is Tony Martin. If it was a straight road out, Tony Martin would be your man, possibly even above Brad. But on the track, Brad is the man. He is the best rider, the most well-equipped rider for an hour on a velodrome.
So does it work the same way when you come out of the banking? You get a slingshot effect and you can't get carried away with that?
No, you have this slingshot and that's where you have to judge your ride. So the power goes on, it comes off twice in each lap. So if you look at a speed profile when you get your SRM cranks, or if you were to run a Garmin, whatever, on the track, if you were to ride round at an even power, what you would find is your speed would go up and down, and that's where your body gets used to that as a track rider, and you get to soak that up. So you've got to go with the track, go with the flow, and not fight against it.
And lastly, if you had to say now, we're about an hour and a half away from the start, if you had to say now what distance Wiggins will do, what do you reckon?
I think with today we're looking probably mid to long 54. I think he has the potential to break Boardman's 56, but I don't think under these conditions.
Okay, a quick update, Lionel, then we'll come to a very special guest.
Yeah, well, Bradley's been on the track for 35 minutes and 18 seconds. He's covered 32 kilometres. And that's 128 laps. He's on course for 54.62 kilometres. And the way they're doing the updates on the big screen, the comparison to Alex Dowsett's distance is that Bradley Wiggins has covered the same distance 1 minute 20 seconds faster.
That was very good from Lionel, because people have been asking us to give more updates. So keep giving updates, Rich.
All right, more updates.
People want to know who's winning this race.
Okay, well, we've been joined by Jill Douglas. BBC commentator for many years. Well, I think you're freelance technically, aren't you, Jill?
Right.
Now, you're here in hospitality, I noticed. I couldn't help but notice. But you've pretty much been there from the start, haven't you, of Bradley Wiggins' career as a senior athlete?
Certainly as a senior athlete, yes. So it was a great privilege to see him win his first global track world title in 2003 in Stuttgart. And I know I've seen him win every world title since then on the track, and Olympic medal, and on the road, whether it be Tour de France or major time trial, including the World Championship. So I've been very fortunate to see all of his landmark wins, which is why it was so important for me personally to try and come and see him today, because I really didn't want this to happen and not to be in the track to see it.
And what do you make of it? I mean, it's very different to other track events, obviously, but what are your impressions? And you're not working for once. which I guess makes it more enjoyable.
Yeah, no, I've not got a microphone in my hand, but I think it's just as tense, just, you know, you're still taking as much interest, and I can tell you that he's well up on the record at the moment, so he's very much on target to break this record. The one thing you noticed when he came up onto the track, number one, he shaved the beard off. He means business. Number two, he was really, really focused. And number three, as soon as he gets on that bike, when you watch Bradley Wiggins in that form, in that position, nobody really rides a bike like Bradley Wiggins. He's got that fantastic position, the long, flat back.
To be fair, you haven't seen me on a bike.
Yeah, well, sadly I have, and it's not something I want to repeat. But, you know, he's got that lovely long, flat back, the long levers, he taps away. Just perfect for the job in hand. If anybody was built to ride an hour, it was Bradley Wiggins. And if you think about him, he's got that sort of Dave Miller lovely position, time trial position, but he's got that wonderful cadence, and he rides within himself, Bradley. And I think, you know, he sets himself his own targets. He's not interested in what anybody's telling him. He just wants to get on the bike and do what he's been, he knows that he can do. And he just looks, you know, serene riding around this track.
It's interesting, isn't it, that getting that time check, that's basically a little bit more than half distance, and he's 120 up on Dowsett. If you compare that to an hour-long time trial, to be 120 up on Dowsett half distance is a very, very good margin on a rider who's not a bad time trialist himself, and indeed beat him at the Giro a couple of years ago.
Exactly, but you think about the Jack Bobber Chase guys who've tried this and who've gone out hard, and is that what Bradley said? No. This guy rides within himself. He has got a target in his mind. There is no chance a guy who can win the Tour de France is going to go out too hard. He will time his effort perfectly. So I think he looks very comfortable. He's being roared around this track. The air pressures are maybe against him. It's possibly not the track I would have chosen had I been going for an hour record. But then again, the chances of me ever going for an hour record.
I thought you were going to break some news there.
But, you know, I think the fact is, what he loses in air pressure, he gains in atmosphere and enthusiasm and excitement and profile. And I think it's fantastic to see the way that this place has come alive. I've been here since the Olympics. This is the first time I've been back when I've got the same sense of excitement, the same sense of atmosphere that we had in 2012.
Great. Well, when you get back to hospitality, Jill, unless you want to stay and watch the rest of it with us here, but probably not.
Much as I'd love to stay, Richard, because your company, I'd never turn my back on it, but I feel as though you've got lots of other more interesting people to talk to.
Oh, I don't know about that, but we'll do our best. Thank you, Jill. Thanks very much for that. Lionel, any more updates? You've been keeping your eye on the boards.
Well, yeah, we're 20 seconds away from two-thirds of the time elapsed. Just coming up to 40 minutes, Bradley Wiggins has been on the track. Covered 36,000 metres, that's 36 kilometres, of course. 54.6, very even now. He's really on that mark of 54.6 kilometres. And if Shane Sutton is right, and he's going to push on in this last sort of 15, 20 minutes, we might see that creep up towards 55. But I think it's not going to go wildly beyond 55 unless he's got something amazing in the bag.
I've got a question, chaps. So Wiggins has been adamant this is going to be his last attempt at this. It's one time only. However, given what we know about the air pressure, we know that conditions aren't ideal. Do you think it is in his makeup at any point in the future to consider having another go and possibly make a comeback?
Well, we asked him about that the other day. He said the only way that this wouldn't be a one-off would be if something had gone wrong in the build-up, if he'd been ill a week or so before. He was adamant that this would be the only time. It does make you wonder if what people say is correct, and Alex Dowsett said this, Manchester's a quicker track. Why is he doing it here?
It's a very good question. But, you know, you have to pin your colours to the mast, you have to choose your venue, you can't switch it around. So once they've made the decision on London, it's probably, you know, it's ideal for the marketing men, isn't it, on the Olympic track where the Olympic Games were held. You know, it's a prestigious event in a prestigious venue. I'm not saying Manchester isn't, but I think probably Bradley Wiggins doing it in his home city, that probably got as much to do with it as anything.
Will he be a little bit disappointed if he doesn't get 55 kilometres?
Well, I think the thing is, looking at the absolute record, Chris Boardman's 56.375 is probably out of reach. Tony Rominger is the second fastest of all time, 55.291. I would have thought that would be a mark that Bradley Wiggins would have wanted to have in his sights had the air pressure been slightly more favourable.
It'll be interesting to see what he goes through. For anyone interested in time trialing, it'll be interesting to see what he goes through 40 kilometres in, and he's approaching that now. 40 kilometres, of course, is 25 miles. It's a standard time trial distance in the UK. You know, it used to be if you broke evens, if you went over under an hour, that was considered quite an achievement. I don't know what the record is these days, but Wiggins is through, coming up to 39 kilometres in 42 and a half minutes. He's going to be certainly well inside an hour.
I think the other point about having another go completely depends on the Rio Olympics. The way he wants to finish his career is in the Olympics in Rio. I think if he does that, there's no way he can ride another attempt at the world hour record.
Ah, we've been joined by another special guest, Matt Raven. Now, Matt Raven, who's been on the podcast before, you're osteopath, chiropractor,
guru,
witch doctor for Garmin, or Cannondale Garmin as they're known now, but you've worked with Bradley Wiggins for a long time. In fact, you went to school with Bradley Wiggins, didn't you, in London?
I did go to school with Bradley Wiggins, yeah.
And then your paths crossed again when he was at Garmin, but I gather you've been working with him in the build-up to the hour record.
He's been basing himself in London for the past week, and while he's been down here, I think, you know, he's got a familiar team around him of people that he works closely with, his massage therapist, his nutritionist, and he just gave me a call and asked if I could pop along to sort of help fine-tune his body to get him ready for the hour record.
And were you able to fine-tune his body? Is that you know his body very well, having worked with him for so long. I mean, you know, an athlete like him is presumably very finely tuned. How well tuned was he for this?
I mean,
without
giving
away too many medical secrets.
I mean, there's no trade secrets to give away except the fact that if you know your body and you know your body how it should be working, you know how your body should be working optimally, and you know you've got people that can help you to sort of achieve that, then I think that's what I helped him to try and do, because I've worked with him for the best part of the last few years. So he just gave me a call, we had a look and helped him out a few things.
I mean, you work with footballers as well, and the sort of impact there is much greater in terms of injuries and so on. He's 35 now, Bradley Wiggins. Not maybe talking about him specifically, but cyclists in general, does it become more of a battle in the mid-30s to keep the body together?
Once you get past about 27 years old, most pro athletes will start taking their body, the biomechanics of their body, a lot more seriously. Brad being 35, he's coming towards, you know, towards the end of the season of his career rather than the beginning of his career. And what he's noticed is coming back onto the track, attempting the hour record, it's a much higher physical toll mechanically on your body than it ever is on the road. Even though you might be riding for 4 or 5 hours on the road, this effort of being in a time trial position for an hour and repetitively doing that and preparing for it takes a big toll out of your body.
So will you be helping him after this effort as well, put himself back together?
I mean, it depends what his next goal is, to be honest with you. I know he's in London for a couple of days, but I would imagine the euphoria will carry on for a few days. Normally after the events, you don't see athletes until they're prepping for the next one.
Thank you, Matt. Enjoy the hospitality.
You're welcome.
Cheers. Ah, we've been joined by a good friend of the podcast, Orla Shinawee. Orla, you're working tonight, of course.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. Well, I am a bit surprised because you're still technically on maternity leave, but you've come back.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't miss this. So, yeah, I'm still technically supposed to be off work, but this has just been...
I think we've got an update.
We just need an update, Rich. We're going to give the listeners what they want. They want more updates. So we're going to pass over to Lionel because he is the king of updates.
Well, 46 minutes on the clock. Bradley Wiggins has ridden 167 laps. That's 42 kilometres now. And he's on for 54.613 kilometres an hour. We're relying on the big screen here in the velodrome for our updates. And that figure, 54.6, has been very constant for the last 15 minutes, which suggests to me he judged it absolutely perfectly if that's what he's going for.
There's quite it started off loud, it calmed down a little bit, but it's the last few minutes has been getting louder and louder.
I've got two earpieces in today to try to hear our studio output and direction from the gallery, because it is absolutely deafening. It's incredible. Of course, we're into uncharted territory right now. The final 15 minutes, he hasn't done that in training. So this is when you would imagine the crowd would really start to spur him on. He might allow the sort of filters in the ears to drop slightly and allow himself to harness that energy. It is absolutely phenomenal.
When you're talking about uncharted territory, I presume you're talking about the live podcast.
Of course, it's all anybody's talking about, to be perfectly honest. I was chatting to Shane Sutton earlier before the ride, and he was saying, you know, it's all down to the last 15 minutes. I asked him actually whether 55 or less, I guess, yeah, so 55, whether it was disappointing. He said no. He said that, it came down to the last 15 minutes, but he's going to break the record. The question is by how much. He then said, off air, I hope I don't live to regret that statement, and it doesn't haunt me forever.
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because in a bike race, when I'm watching normal bike races, you see moments where riders will get out of the saddle, they'll attack, they'll so on. Here, he might be trying harder and harder, but he's going to keep locked in that same position the whole time. It won't necessarily be visible that he is trying harder, and so it's hard to imagine what's going on with him, and what, you know, the helmet and everything means he's almost invisible to us. We can't really see him.
And that's what's fascinating as well when you look at, compare it to other styles of bike racing where there's an awful lot of showmanship, isn't there, in your facial expression, and you've got to display a certain character to your rivals to try to fool them into thinking that you've broken or that you're much stronger than you actually are to catch them by surprise. But with this, he is just in a tunnel. There's no advantage to be gained from allowing any kind of emotion or any psychological distraction. So yeah, he's got to just be in that position, and that in itself is just agonizing.
That's hard enough for us to watch, isn't it? Right, Orla, we better let you get on with your day job. Thanks for joining us.
Not at all.
See you on a regular podcast soon.
Absolutely, I'll see you there. Enjoy, good luck, guys.
What's happening now, Lionel?
Well, what's happening now is that it's 49 minutes on the clock, just a smidgen under 49 minutes on the clock, so Bradley Wiggins is approaching the last 10 minutes of his hour record attempt. 178 laps covered, coming up to 45 kilometres, and he just dipped below 54.6 for the overall distance. He's well up on Alex Dowsett's mark, so he's going to break the hour record, but he's just dipping below a little bit the pace that he was on, say, 5-10 minutes ago.
Because I was chatting to Orla, I didn't notice what he went through 40 kilometres in. Did you notice that, Lionel?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
Lionel, you're supposed to be keeping track of this.
I ran out of paper, and then Daniel spilled some water.
Oh. Sorry about that, chaps. I did notice a few laps ago, he did twitch once. The first time since the clock started, he actually kind of made any kind of discernible movement with his head.
Well spotted, Daniel. You've certainly justified your...
I've turned into a track cycling expert in the space of 49 minutes, 53 seconds, haven't I?
Yeah, I mean, you're picking it up very quickly, Daniel. You know, Richard and I have been around velodromes for 10, 15 years, but you've pretty much caught us up in 1 hour.
I don't know about you, but I'm feeling it now. It's hard to keep talking for this long,
yeah,
isn't it?
I should just say, Rick Chasey on Twitter said that we had a very strong start. Did we step out a bit too hard?
I feel like I might have done. I feel like I've used up all my words. Daniel, this is where you come into your own. Tell us about the Critérium du Dauphiné.
Well, Peter Kenyon won stage one today, didn't he? Obviously, as you would expect, a big contingent from Team Sky here tonight. Dave Brailsford, the Pub Landlord, as we like to call him on the podcast, we mentioned him. He's here. Shane Sutton, who obviously is involved, Team Sky, he's here. The noise is really cranking up now. We're into the last 10 minutes. This is the kind of time in a football match when you might score the winner. Any goal from this point could be crucial. So, you know, we're all on tenterhooks.
I've got to mention the T-shirt competition. We're giving away a Where Are We Lionel T-shirt. See at the Cycling Podcast. What are we? Cycling underscore podcast. People can tweet in questions. Remember, using the hashtag TCP Hour. We're going to be carrying on for a few minutes after the hour, so, you know, it's time to answer a few questions. Chiro's back. Chiro?
The real question is, this record is
a great record, or is a little bit disappointing because Brad said that he would have liked to reach 55.250? This is the real question.
Well, we were just saying that very thing ourselves, and wondering whether he might be a little bit disappointed. We've been joined by Simon Mottram, the man behind Rafa, the founder of Rafa, and you're obviously the clothing sponsor for Wigan's team. I gather there's a special jersey being made as we speak to be given to him at the end of his ride.
Exactly. So in football, when the FA Cup final happens, somebody engraves the name of the winning team on the trophy towards the end of the game. We felt that cycling needed its trophy moment, so we've got a black silk jersey. I've got two people from my product team who are going to be stitching like crazy to put the final distance onto that jersey.
Well, they can sew on a five now.
I think the five's looking quite good, yeah. We're not sure about the second one yet, though, are we?
But, you must have brought an awful lot of numbers with you, because...
We have.
Never unprepared.
Yeah, no, exactly. We've got about 18 needles already threaded.
Excellent.
It's like a military operation over there.
Hope it was delivered by helicopter.
Simon, don't mention needles. Never mention needles.
No needle policy. Apart from when it comes to embroidering jerseys, of course. Have you enjoyed the occasion, though, Simon? I mean, you're obviously heavily invested in Bradley Wiggins and in his new team. It's got a big presence here. This must feel like a sort of triumphant occasion for you.
I think there's only one person. I don't know what you think. To me, there's only one person in cycling who could do this. Well, there are two people, but we don't talk about the other one. And I think he's in a complete league apart. And it's so exciting because it means so much to people who are outside of cycling. So for me, that's the most important thing. It goes in my little book of amazing moments, basically.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Simon. Enjoy the rest of the evening and what looked like celebration.
Isn't it mad?
It's getting very noisy now. Thank you. What's the latest score on the boards, Lionel?
Well, the clock is ticking as it has been for 53 minutes and 58 seconds now. So 54 minutes on the clock. Bradley Wiggins has gone through 49 kilometres. He's holding up a bit now. 54.561 kilometres is the predicted mark based on his speed so far. Alex Dowsett covered this distance 1 minute 46 seconds slower than Bradley Wiggins. So Wiggins is well up. The question really is, where does Wiggins fit on the all-time list? Is he going to beat Tony Rominger's fastest time, which is the second fastest time overall, or is he going to just slot into third place in the all-time list? I think he's going to slot into third place in the all-time list.
Sorry, Lionel, I have no idea what you said there. I can barely hear you.
No, the noise is absolutely deafening now. The last five minutes, the crowd are really ramping up. They've been doing a Mexican wave. They're on their feet, some of them applauding constantly. The atmosphere is pretty electrifying.
The crowd's played a blinder, actually. They've been pacing themselves perfectly. They did take a little break there in the middle part, but now they're giving it everything. There's only 5 minutes to go. I wonder what kind of state he's going to be in at the end, because, as we said earlier, Alex Dowsett was fresh when he came off. And maybe it depends on whether you break the record or not and whether you set the target that you set yourself or not. And I think the question that we have is, will he be happy with a long 54, which it looks like he will get?
I think that the sensation that he'll probably feel will be quite similar to what he felt after the Tour de France victory. I mean, a lot of guys who put an awful lot into a Tour de France, as he did, as you know, the likes of the controversial Lance Armstrong did, they talk about the relief they feel at the end of an event like that, because you know the hard work is all done, rather than euphoria. And I think, you know, he may well feel that. But going back to the pacing, I mean, you know, last few days, few weeks, we've spoken to a lot of people about the hour record, and what they all say is the ideal scenario is to have enough left in the tank to basically turn the last 10 minutes into a sprint. And that is hopefully, from his point of view, what Bradley Wiggins is doing right now.
I mean, I'll mention the elephant in the room, because he's talked a lot about Tony Rominger's record, and he technically did it on a legal bike. So there is this question of why has that been erased from the record books? Now, without wanting to speculate too much, Rominger was a client of Dr. Michele Ferrari, the notorious doctor who obviously worked with Lance Armstrong and others. And so a lot of people feel uncomfortable, I think, with that record being spoken of as a legitimate record, even though, I should point out, there's nothing to suggest that Tony Rominger was doping.
Yeah, but I think the rules now are so clear about all sorts of things like saddle angle, handlebar angle, top tube angles. Everything is nailed down and very, very clearly set. Rominger's bike may well have conformed, but did it? You know, we has it been measured up by anyone to see whether it conforms to today's record? So really, the UCI rolled back the years to 2000 when Chris Pullman set the athlete's hour, and that's where the hour record has kind of evolved on from. So here we are now, 57 and a half minutes on the clock. The music is playing loudly here in the velodrome as well. It really is coming to a climax. A couple of minutes or so left. Ciro's rejoined us.
I mean, let's be clear that he's going to set a new world hour record tonight, and the question becomes who's capable of beating that, and there are only really only two or three riders in the world who might be capable of beating it.
Well, I mean, Rob Hales said in his interview earlier that if it was a straight line effort, Tony Martin would probably be the man to beat. But has Tony Martin got the track craft? We don't really know.
Ciro, you're back.
Exactly. And another question now is, with this new limit made by Brad, there will someone that will try to beat him or not? There will be someone as Tony Martin that then will try to beat him or not. This is also a big question mark.
Yes, so 58 and a half minutes, a minute and a half to go. Still absolutely no sign from Wiggins that he's near the end of the ride. He's presumably, he's emptying the tank now, even though we almost can't see it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, he looks as smooth now as he did 58 minutes ago.
And he's inside the last 3 kilometres. If he punctures or crashes now, he won't lose any time.
Great insight there, Daniel. 1 minute to go. Well, let me just let you hear the noise of the crowd for a moment.
I have to say, it's not often you get to witness something as incredible as this. Whatever you think about the hour record, whatever you think about Bradley Wiggins, whatever you think about this quite bizarre event, the atmosphere is absolutely incredible here now.
Yeah, I think Simon Mottram hit the nail on the head. He's the only rider who can probably do this. It just looked like you were shouting at me there, Lionel. I didn't hear a word you said. I just saw your mouth moving.
Count us down, Richard. Count us down.
Coming up for 10 seconds to go, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and he has to complete the lap. He must complete the lap.
Stop, Brad, stop, you can stop now.
There we are, 219 laps. The clock's still going. Wiggins has drifted up the track. For the first time in an hour, he's sat up, hands on the, not on the dry bars. Head down. He's not quite summons the energy yet to be able to lift an arm or anything. What is the final distance, Lionel?
Well, we're waiting for the big screen to tell us exactly what the distance is.
You should have been on top of this. You had one job. The updates are fine. There we are, 54.4 kilometres. I just stole Lionel's big moment. He's been giving us updates all night, and he dropped the ball at the last minute.
Until I've said it, it's not official. So 54.4 kilometres is the distance. They're awaiting official confirmation now.
Okay, he's pedalled into the track centre now, and he's just slowing down. I'd imagine that at some point he will wave at the crowd. There he is, waving at the crowd now, pumping the air and being acclaimed by this sellout crowd who are all standing up.
And I think one of the interesting things we can say straight away is that there was a worry or there was a hope on the part of some people that he would put the record out of reach for the next 10, 15 years. 54.4 is not so far away from what Alex Dowsett achieved in Manchester, 52.937. So Alex had already declared that he was going to have another attempt at some point in the future, and he will definitely think that that is an achievable record.
Yeah, I don't think Bradley has put the record on the shelf in the way that he perhaps would have wanted to. He just got off the bike over there, just on the other side of the track. Arms aloft, Ernie Fairgrave's taken the bike from him. Ernie's looked after that bike all week. He's being supported by a couple of helpers. He looks absolutely shattered. A kiss for his wife, Kath, a hug with his children. And Bradley Wiggins is the new hour record holder. He's a little unsteady on his feet, it has to be said, although he's walking okay now. How he'll be walking tomorrow is another matter. But 54.4 is the official world hour record. The third fastest time, or the third furthest distance of all time. And he applauds the crowd here in the velodrome, arms aloft, thumbs up. Well done, Bradley.
Meanwhile, Simon Mottram's away stitching that jersey. 54.526 kilometres is the new world hour record. And yeah, that's a mark that some other guys might well fancy. I mean, Rohan Dennis a few weeks ago said that he was starting to go for again at the end of his career. Still a young man. I think Bradley Wiggins is going to talk just now. We can maybe hear him. No, maybe not. He's just sitting on a throne. It's like London 2012 all over again. Let's see the leg cross and the victory sign.
It's also a bit like Ashley Cole's wedding. Ashley Cole, his wedding, sat on a throne, didn't he, infamously?
So did David Beckham.
Correct.
Good knowledge.
I knew I'd come in handy somewhere.
Brilliant. Well, we're gonna wrap things up, I think, soon. I mean, that's it. We're gonna go and speak to Bradley Wiggins. We're gonna get some interviews from him, and we'll hopefully play those in a future regular podcast. But thank you very much for joining us in this first ever world first. A live podcast, we think. It's been an experiment that I hope has worked. Hope you've enjoyed listening. Thank you again to Jaguar for sponsoring this. We hope to do it again.
Yeah, maybe not for an hour record attempt, but yeah, we'll certainly be doing some live podcasts during the Tour de France, won't we?
Well, yeah, that's certainly on the cards, I think. If you're up for that, then they'll be more interactive, I think. We apologies for not getting through too many questions tonight, although we did answer the essential one about Daniel's hair. But at the tour, hopefully we'll do live podcast, more of a Q&A session.
Yeah, you said it was it was an historic first live hour record podcast, world record being set by Bradley Wiggins today. It was really a historic day for professional cycling, wasn't it, in so many different ways.
A huge day. Well, listen, thank you everybody for listening. Our numbers have been excellent. We've had a big audience. Thank you very much to Paul Scoynes, our able producer, who's been sitting here making this thing happen and working against the odds. It's not easy in a venue like this, so a massive thank you to Paul. We're very, very appreciative. Thank you. Thank you, Daniel. Oh, and a thank you to Nigel Brown as well. Sorry. Nigel's been a great help too. He's been running around grabbing people and generally oiling the wheels of the cycling podcast. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. I've enjoyed my time in the velodrome. I'll come again.
You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast. Thank you to Glass Pear for the music in this episode. For more information and to download more editions of the show, visit thecyclingpodcast.com.